opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And the iPhone, the new iPhones finally came out. This was a big iPhone week.
It was a big Apple week.
Big Apple week, yeah. And the new operating system came out. You know, and there was a story that came out that was having to talk about it. You know, they almost dropped an atomic bomb by mistake over North Carolina in 1961.
I didn't hear this.
Both bombs actually fell. One almost went to the third stage of detonation.
Good grief.
Some guy has been finally used the Freedom of Information. I'm going to go through all the technical stuff on this.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, and, you know, some people were smuggling devices inside of banks, KVM devices, to sort of log onto the network, and they managed to steal a couple of million pounds at these London banks. Windows XP, of course, is just about ready. It's just near death. We'll talk about that. Google and Raspberry are joining forces to create something called Coder. And today we're going to feature the guy behind Salesforce.com, Mark Benioff. He's as flamboyant as his mentor, Larry Ellison, there at Oracle. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Tremendously big.
There's a letter in your mailbox. There.
Mr. Big Voice, would you help? He's not going to...
He's okay. Looking at you with that cockeyed look.
I'm going to have to go to the gym because it's getting bigger and bigger.
No, I think you
week.
Need to go to the union is what you need to do.
Yeah, man, the union might be it. We got an email from Arnie McKechnie. Arnie has been a while since he's written the show. He's from Davisonville, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Dr. Schertz. Your comments about education last Saturday's Tech Talk was right on, but I think Einstein said it a little differently. You know, I was saying the real value of education is what you know after you've forgotten what you memorized. The quote that he had from Einstein is this: "Education is what remains after you've forgotten everything that you've learned in school." I mean, Einstein was really quite he's sort of a self-taught guy. Now, he says a friend of ours. His children, 12, 7, and 4, and they told me that spelling, grammar, and cursive writing are no longer taught in schools because the feeling is that word has spell check and grammar check. I'm thinking that's a bad idea.
Uh-huh.
And cursive isn't needed because computers, well, they do all the printing. He said, I hope it's not the same as Stratford. Well, actually, by the time the kids come to Stratford, they already know their math and they already know how to write, so we don't worry about that. He suggests Ray Dolby, who died recently, is an interesting guy to spotlight on Tech Talk. Ray would be an interesting guy. Of course, he's the Dolby sound system. He'd be an interesting guy. My question for Tech Talk this week, we finally get to the question from Arnie, is what does it make a difference if one has HDMI 2.0 cable versus a 1.2 cable from an earlier, an earlier model cable? It doesn't look like there's a change in the connection. Really enjoy the show, Arnie McKechnie. Well, each new version of HDMI has faster data rates to support higher resolution. You know, HDMI is like a video transfer cable, which includes sound. Now, the main problem with any cable system, of course, is attenuation at higher frequencies. So if the cable is short, say less than 5 meters, you could probably use an HDMI 1.2 cable for a newer version of HDMI. And since it's short enough, the attenuation is not going to kill you. But I wouldn't run a long cable, say, to the next room. I think the attenuation would be too bad then. What they do is they go to higher and higher frequencies, they have to be more careful on how they twist the wire pairs. They have to be more accurate. And so they have to be much, much more accurate on how they twist the wire pairs, how they do the impedance matching at the end. And so they're just built to higher standards than the lower frequency cable, but it shouldn't be a problem. And it is true that there are a number of connectors on HDMI, and so they've got connector A and B. Those were the first ones. Most of your HDMI connections have A or B. There's a C connector, which is in the standard. This was hardly ever used. And there's an and then there's a D and an E, which is like a mini thing for like going in either for automotive use or for mobile devices. It sounds like you've either got an A or B cable, so you don't have a cable issue. But I don't think that's going to be a problem for you using an older cable as long as the connector works. We got an email from Robert Taylor in Amarillo, Texas.
Another frequent guy.
Yeah. Hi, Doc. I haven't written for a while, but still thoroughly enjoy your show. I'm glad you're still on the radio and have taught me a lot over the last several years. Thanks. I see David Byrd is still drinking the apple Kool-Aid. And while I still love my Windows, I can no longer take the battery out. I have a Nokia Lumina 928, and it's a fantastic phone. Jim Rush should try this one out before he's forever doomed to use an iPhone.
I'm well beyond that, Robert, yeah. Because we were just swapping Apple gear around here.
That's right. I do have a question. I'm getting my mother an Android Galaxy Note 3 due to a larger screen size. She has several things on her calendar that she likes to have synced up with her Galaxy Note when she gets used to it. She has Windows 7 on her desktop and an Outlook 2003. Is there a way to sync the two calendars? I sync mine from work using Microsoft Exchange, but she doesn't have access to that. From doing research on the internet, I think it's possible. I can't figure out how she does it. She does have a Microsoft Live account and an email account for Outlook.com. Thanks for any information and keep the information rolling. Chief Robert Taylor from the Amarillo, Texas Police Department.
Oh, that's right. He's law enforcement. I'm going to go switch immediately to a Samsung before I get arrested.
You know, I got a speeding ticket last week. I was driving to our new Virginia Beach campus.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't know.
You have to be careful.
I've got to be very careful. He cut it down so I was below 80.
Because where were you when this happened?
I was between Newport News and Virginia Beach.
On 64?
Yeah, I was almost there. But you see, if you're over 80, it's automatically reckless driving.
What are you doing over 80 miles an hour?
I know you're a busy guy. I was only 81. I thought I was 79.
Doc.
I think it was a calibration issue.
Okay, all right. Please be careful.
But he cut me down. But I haven't had a ticket for a long time. That's a whole other story. Maybe I need some advice from Robert Taylor down at Amarillo.
You might.
Well, first of all, it is easy to do this, Robert. You need to install Google Calendar Sync, which automatically syncs your Outlook calendar entries to your Google Calendar. So they've got it already worked out. But you have to download it. This software allows you to sync the calendar entries either from Outlook or to Google or vice versa or both ways. Any changes made in one program automatically is reflected in the other. So that's the nice thing. She makes a change in her phone, it's going to automatically show up in Outlook. It's going to go back and forth. It's a two-way data exchange. Now, in your Samsung Galaxy S3, go to Settings and then go to Accounts plus Sync. Then you want to add the account. And then go to Add Account and then Google and then enter your details. And when it's done, make sure to check the Sync Calendar option. So it should be relatively easy to do, and that was a good question.
Yes.
We got an email from Kevin in Alexandria. Dear Doc and Jim, I have a router which connects to both my desktop PC and several wireless devices. You know, I got a tablet, a laptop, and so forth. Now, whenever I turn on the desktop, my laptops and my tablets, their internet connection just slows down to a crawl. But when they're hooked up to the internet alone without the laptop, without the desktop on, the internet runs fine. How do I fix this? Thanks, Kevin. Well, Kevin, sounds like your desktop computer simply hogging all the internet bandwidth. Now, there are several reasons why this could be happening. The desktop computer may be trying to upload or download something. Like it could be a very large file, or it might be trying to upload several things. My son's computer did this when he was downloading music over his peer-to-peer software like Kazaa or BitTorrent or LimeWire. I'm certain it was always legal software.
Of course.
I'm certain.
Right.
But he could be downloading like 20 songs at the same time. And the way this peer-to-peer software works, you can be uploading 20 songs, and it just totally saturated the bandwidth. So I'd have to log on to my router, and I would simply, if I need to get access, if he wasn't home, I'd simply cut him off. I'd simply cut off his MAC address, and he was off the network until I let him back on again. because he would let this download go on, and he would go out to dinner, and, he'd say, Dad, I got something really important going on. Do not turn off my computer. And, of course, all the bandwidth was just eaten up. So I have lived with this. Now, there could also be, other things, like your desktop could be downloading updates, for instance, and then it'll speed back up to normal when they're all downloaded. So now, probably the most troubling thing, you could have malware, because this malware sometimes will take over your computer and starts uploading and downloading stuff. It could be sending out emails and doing all kinds of stuff. So those are possible things you could do. Now, I would check to see what the computer's actually doing. I'd check the process monitor on your Windows 7 machine. You can download Process Monitor from Microsoft. It's part of the SysInternals suite of tools. It's a very nice thing. You can play around. You can see what's going on inside your computer. So you have to go to, so you can download it from Microsoft. And they've got a lot, SysInternals actually has a lot of tools that they do. See, Microsoft Boss bought SysInternals, and they just brought all of their suite of tools and made it part of Microsoft. It's a good question, and it's a frequent problem at home.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you see, at work we solve this problem by doing bandwidth tailoring. We can control it so that one computer can't get more than a certain amount of bandwidth, and we can control this. But the routers that you have at home don't have that sophistication, that level of sophistication, so you really can't do that. We got an email from Feroz in Fredericksburg. Dear Tech Talk, I've got a Nikon Digital single lens reflex, and I'd like to get the right memory card. I've been going there looking at memory cards. You know, there are some slow ones that are just dirt cheap, and they really look attractive because of the price. And the fastest ones are really expensive. How do I make the correct choice? Thanks, Feroz in Fredericksburg. Well, for us, all memory cards have both size and speed specifications. The faster the card, the more expensive. Memory prices are dropping fast, and both speed and size are growing each year. Now, here, there are four classes of speed. Like class two is 2 megabits per second. And that's if you got SD video, for instance, or just maybe some relatively small pictures. That is the slowest of them, and that's actually dirt cheap. I'd certainly not recommend it. Class 4 is 4 megabits per second. That's for some videos, also for stills. Class 6 is 6 megabits per second for high-definition video and high-definition stills. Class 10 is 10 megabits per second. That would be for 1080 high-definition video or burst shooting mode. Now, they've come out with this super high speed ultra high speed one, and I don't know that the standard's fully fixed, but when I looked at ultra high speed standard one, it looked like they were running at about 50 megabits per second, and that would be for real time broadcast or for very large high definition video files. So the speed that you need depends on your application. Since both class two and class four are cheap, I never get a class 2 because a class 4 is almost the same price. But, and given the fact that prices are falling and that your camera supports HD video in burst mode, I'd say you ought to get a 10 at least.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got the burst mode, and if you're going to take burst photos, you really need it. Because the faster the memory card, the faster the camera can dump the picture into memory, and it only has so much of a buffer. So you really need a fast card if you want to do a burst. So I'd say get class 10, and I think you'll be just perfectly fine. I don't know whether your camera is going to support the ultra high speed one, because now we're going so fast it may not be able to offload the data any faster than that. But that's a good question, and
yes,
it's a little confusing because, you know, you go to the store frequently, the guys there don't know much about anything to give you any really solid information.
No, they don't.
We got an email from Amber in Fairfax. Dear Tech Talk, I'm confused about all the browsers that are available. What's the difference, and what do you recommend? Thanks, Amber from Fairfax. Well, actually, Amber, I have 5 browsers on my machine. So
you're like the browser clearinghouse.
Yeah, so, you know, so I have a certain degree of indecision. Actually, I have a reason for it. I'm running Internet Explorer. I have Chrome. I have Firefox. I have Opera. And I have Safari. Now, see, I like to look at the Stratford website and all of our web-based stuff with all the different browsers to see whether there's a difference in how it looks, and that affects some of our web development stuff. So I have them all. Now, Chrome by Google has really gotten the best reviews in terms of speed and security. A close second in terms of reviews has been Firefox. But in recent years, Microsoft has really made great strides in Internet Explorer. It used to be, you know, viewed as a dog by the tech community, but their latest version of Internet Explorer is not too bad. So it's really a close third in terms of the reviews. And then the last ones in terms of speed and are really Opera and Safari. They're much slower. As it turns out, Internet Explorer has over 50% of the installed base. Firefox and Chrome have around 16%. Safari has around 12%. But the Microsoft share has been constant for about the past 3 years, around 50%. So it looks like we sort of stabilized out here. And I think they were declining quite rapidly until they did a real improvement. I think you're going to start seeing a shift toward Chrome and Safari as we move more and more to mobile devices, because of course Android devices like Chrome, because they're both made by Google, and Apple devices like Safari, because that's made because Safari is made by Apple, and so written by Apple, and so I think you're going to see a gradual uptick as mobile things go on, but you really are going to be fine with any of them. Some people feel as though you are more secure using Chrome than Internet Explorer because that's the one that they always try to target. I don't know if that's actually true anymore, mm-hmm. but so it doesn't. It's not really too critical which one you use. Just make certain whichever one you pick of the top three, I'd pick either Internet Explorer, Chrome, or Firefox, that you always get the latest updates.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, Doc, that was a full mailbag.
It was a very full mailbag.
But we always need more mail, right?
Yes, we always. Now that's when I'm dealing with a radio professional.
This is called a segue.
Yeah, this is a segue. Yeah, you know, listen, we love your email. So send us your email to techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll either get back to you by email or we'll cover your question on the air. And also, we are checking out the Tech Talk page on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/techtalkonline, and we'd love your comments during the show.
This is Tech Talk Radio, heard every Saturday on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and we will have more right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to be talking about Mark Russell Benioff. Mark Russell Benioff is the founder and chairman and CEO of Salesforce.com, a cloud computing company. Mark Russell Benioff was born, this is how what his mother calls him, was born September 25th, 1964.
So if your parents call you by all three names, or four,
it means
you're
in trouble.
It means you're probably going to wind up in the tech field.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
all right. Just checking.
Benioff was raised in a Jewish family in the San Francisco metropolitan area. While in high school, he cleaned cases at Kern's Fine Jewelry in Burlingame, California. One day, he walked across the street to Radio Shack and saw the TRS-80 Model 1. It was about $400. It's the first community he'd ever seen, and he fell in love with it. At 14, he spent hours at Radio Shack teaching himself how to program. I mean, he couldn't afford a computer, so he'd just go to Radio Shack and kind of play on the computer.
He should have gotten a job there.
Yeah. And so he also loved CB radios, so he had a side job fixing people's CB radios. He was only 15 then. Now, what his grandmother did, she would match the earnings that he got while he was fixing CB radios. So every time he'd earn $10 fixing CB radios, she'd give him $10 so that he could finally afford to buy his TRS-80. And he finally bought it with the matching funds from his grandmother, and he wrote his first piece of software called How to Juggle. And he sold it for $75 to C-Load magazine in Goleta, California. He was off and running in the software development business. Then he founded Liberty Software and designed the Atari computer, a number of Atari computer games with names like Crypt of the Undead, Escape from Vulcan's Island. Now, this software actually paid for college.
That's funny.
So, he was already in the software business while he was in high school. He graduated from Burlingame High School in 1982. While in college, Benioff worked as an assembly language programmer at Apple, and he loved that job. I mean, he loved Apple, and really admired Steve Jobs. Well, he received a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration from the University of Southern California in 1986. The day after graduating from University of Southern California, he started at Oracle, where he took orders coming in through the 800 number. I mean, he was a business major. Took orders coming from the 800 numbers. He was a star salesman, and he rose quickly through the ranks to become one of Larry Ellison's favorites. At age 23, he was the company's Rookie of the Year. 3 years later, he was promoted to VP.
Good grief.
Making $300K a year, and he wanted to be just like Larry Ellison. He drove a Ferrari, and he drove the model for Ferrari that was more expensive than Larry's.
That's probably a mistake.
Yeah, it probably was. He was flamboyant, just like Larry Ellison. They were like two buds. They got along really well for a while. And eventually, you know, the two buds parted and they became enemies.
Sometimes when people are so similar,
they were very similar. But because of all this rapid success, Benioff actually didn't feel very fulfilled. By age 31, he was rich, he was powerful, and he felt lost. He didn't know. He said, "Well, is this all it is? You know, I'm out of California making all this money, but so what?"
Yeah.
So with Ellison's blessing, Benioff took 6 months sabbatical and traveled to Hawaii and India, a lot like Steve Jobs. And he found himself when he was in India. He was interested in yoga and Eastern religions. And when he came back, he put this huge picture of the Dalai Lama on the wall of his office, and he would periodically do yoga in between his he still drove the Ferrari, and he still lived a pretty wild lifetime, but he would slow down and do a little yoga and think about the Dalai Lama when he came back. Now, the idea for Salesforce came in the fall of 1998 while Benioff was still at Oracle. Now, there's a lot of Benioff says it was really his idea, but there are a lot of guys at Oracle say, well, actually, it wasn't his idea, and he just copped the idea and this started Salesforce. So there's a little bit of uncertainty there, depending on whose account you read, you get a different side of the story. But Ellison encouraged Benioff to start a company. And so he gave Benioff time off to start the company. Ellison invested $2 million in the company and agreed to sit on the Salesforce.com board of directors. So Benioff started Salesforce.com in March of 1999 in a rented San Francisco apartment, and defined its mission as creating the end of software. See, because he actually, he's credited with turning the whole software industry on its head and using the internet to revamp the software. And he basically created terms like software as a service or platform as a service. And he allowed customers to build their own application on the company's cloud. And see, whereas Oracle sold software and you'd install it and you'd own, you'd lease that software, he was basically selling a service and you just use whatever you ate. You didn't have to buy the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So it was a completely different business model. And so it was really quite revolutionary what he did at Salesforce.com. But he was extremely flamboyant. When they had the grand opening of Salesforce.com, he spent millions bringing people in, big singers. He just was a big spender and extremely flamboyant. He was not really a technical guy, I would say.
More of a sales guy.
He's kind of a sales guy. He's a salesy guy, and he knows how to make something look really interesting. Mm-hmm. So he was great. He's a great marketer. He's author of three books, including the national bestseller Behind the Cloud. Now, once he got more money, because he is quite wealthy now, I forgot to get his exact net worth. He pioneered the 1-1-1 philanthropic model, in which he urged companies to contribute 1% of their profits, 1% of their equity, and 1% of employee hours to their community. And this particular model is being used by a lot of Silicon Valley companies, including Google. And Benioff and his wife have been praised as probably the best people, having the best system for donating money.
Mm-hmm.
And so he really did change his way. But it was an interesting thing. I was just out in San Jose this last week at a CEO meeting that I go to quarterly, and Salesforce.com is there just down the street from Oracle, and it's kind of that whole Silicon Valley area is kind of exciting with all these tech startups. But there you go. Everything you want to know about Mark Russell Benioff.
According to Forbes, his net worth as of 2012, he is ranked 209 on the Forbes 400.
Okay.
$2.6 billion. Not shabby.
Not shabby. And he got a BSBA, and he got a business degree, not even a technical degree.
Wow.
But he learned from Larry Ellison, and they almost called him when he was Oracle. They said he was like Larry's alter ego.
Mm-hmm.
And Benioff really didn't blossom until he got split away from Oracle. By the way, let me tell you what happened. They're not getting along that well anymore, because then Oracle started to doing a sales module, software as a service, very similar to Salesforce.com. And when Benioff, he was going around the Oracle website and he found it. When he discovered it, he was just livid. And then, and so he told Larry Ellison to resign from the board. Then Larry said, "Well, I'm not going to resign, because see, if he resigns from the board, he loses all of his stock options.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's fired from the board, he gets to keep them all." So he said, "No, if you want me to go, you've got to fire me." Well, eventually Larry did resign from the board, and in the end, Benioff gave him all the stock options. So I think Larry Ellison owns about 4% of the company. But these guys are so close; their personalities are so similar that actually they don't get along that well anymore.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Well, we hope you were paying attention, because you have a chance to win free food and a gold star, or actually a high mark of some sort. Doc will decide that as we play the pop quiz coming up here on Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. More right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
And welcome back to the classroom of the airways, masquerading as a radio show. That's how we get on the air. We go, you know, all the program managers think it's a radio show, program directors.
No.
But actually, we know. It's a classroom.
Because we have a more global sense of thinking once we've been in here, inside
these
walls.
That's right. It doesn't matter how you transmit the information, it's still a classroom.
Exactly.
Now, and whenever there's a class, there is, of course, going to be an assessment. We call this also, some people call that a test, but, you know, when you're an educator, you call it an assessment.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the correct answer to this pop quiz, you will receive two tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room or the Creme Dining Room. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Mark Russell Benioff. He is founder and chairman and CEO of Salesforce.com. If you remember, he started playing around with computers while he was still in high school. What was his first computer? If you get that answer correct, you will win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room or the Creme Dining Room.
Now, the crucial part of this quiz is that you have to get the answers to us. And since you can't be in this particular space, you've got to call us on the phone. If you're calling from west of Burlingame, California, it's 877-936-9333. If perhaps you're out there in the cloud somewhere, you know, it's 877-936-9333. And the wild card line for everybody else is 877-936-9333.
And, of course, if you're calling from, say, Russia or Alaska, then you would want to use the Skype connection. You can just simply go to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded directly to the studio free of charge.
Very good. So, Doc, we've just gotten a visitor. So what should we do here? Shall we talk to David for a minute while Andrew answers the phone?
Should think we should just do that. We're waiting for the pop quiz answer here.
We need to play the music first.
Yes. Don't step.
Oh yeah.
I walk in.
Hi folks, this is David Burt.
Don't step. Make it pop.
There we go. And David is getting down over there.
Yeah.
Cuz he's a hip kind of guy. Well, you're on four, right?
I don't think your mic's on yet.
I don't think it's on yet.
Oh, now it's
on. There we go.
Doc, always good to see you.
Oh, yeah.
Always good to see you. You've been shopping for clothes.
Oh, yeah. I'm dressed up this morning.
Yeah, exactly. You certainly are, sir. Always keeping in the trends. Yeah. It's fall and he's wearing shorts.
It's Hilfiger. What do
it
you
does,
want?
Listen,
I'm wearing shorts.
It's not very hard to be trendy in a radio station.
Yeah, you're right about that, yeah.
It's a radio. Right. This is no, it's not radio. It's a classroom of the airways.
Yeah, classroom
That's
of
right.
the airways,
That's
yes.
right. I took the, what is it, the invisible stairway up to the
you
galaxy.
You took the space elevator.
The space elevator.
Down, you came
That's
down
right.
on the space elevator.
Yes. Yeah. Having a slow show, bring out the space elevator.
There you go.
Right, you know. It's anyway, always there
it
because
always
it'll never
there.
Be developed. They're all, it's always in development.
Okay, let me cut to the quick here.
Okay,
I know
good.
You guys got a lot of stuff to get to.
We have tons.
And
I'm double. And you're double parked too.
I'm double parked.
Yeah.
The iPhone. What is the difference between now the new iPhone 5C? What is this 5? What?
The 5C and the 5S.
The 5C stands for cheap, right?
So, yeah, the cheap. Thank you.
That's what, that's what I get the tip in on that?
It's cheap. So, if but you can't afford an iPhone, that's what you're going to get, the 5C.
But it's only $100 cheaper. It's not that much cheaper.
Right. So, and what aren't you getting with that one that you're getting with
the you're not getting the 60. You do not get the 64-bit operating system, and you get a plastic case.
Right, a plastic case.
Oh. Oh, that's not
but great. But people said the plastic case feels almost like enamel. I mean, they said it really feels good.
Enamel.
Said,
okay.
Enamel? Like
your teeth like or a bathtub.
It doesn't feel like a cheap plastic. It got pretty good reviews.
That's good.
You
that's
like that?
Good. That's very good.
But
thank
so
you.
The idea is that they've actually forked the iPhone product line, and so people are thinking that the 5C is probably going to drop in price to maybe $250 or $300 for China and for these other countries.
For China?
How about us? Well, they want us to buy the 5S, the expensive one.
Of course.
They're doing the cheap one for the developing
For the Chinese kids.
For the Chinese kids and also in India. And they've got
Excuse
all
me,
the,
don't we don't they have all our debt?
They do.
Why do they need a cheap phone?
Well, that's it. But only the government has our debt. You know, the workers, don't have our money.
Okay. One other quick question. I asked you this off the air a while back, but somebody may be in the same spot I am. I went to the 5, but I have all these photos on my phone that I don't have on the hard drive. And I can just tell the folks what you told me to do, because I did exactly what you said not to do.
So what you want to do is, because you've already synced...
Oh, he's getting serious. He's putting his watch
back
on.
So what you've done, you've already synced up your new phone to your iTunes account.
You are correct.
And it only allows you to sync up with one device. So if you plug your old phone back into the computer, don't really sync it to iTunes. Close iTunes.
Close iTunes.
And then go to My Computer, and then go to an external hard drive. It'll look like an extra external hard drive.
Right.
Because you've got this little memory chip in there.
And click that.
Click on that and open it, and there will be a subdirectory with all your pictures, and just copy them right over. Okay. It's just like you're copying them right off of a hard drive.
I love that.
So it's very simple. Now the nice thing about, I'm thinking of getting the 5C.
Oh, really?
The expensive one.
So you can go overseas and
5S.
So you can use it overseas.
The 5S. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's 5 shirts.
That's what it is.
That's right.
There's a reach.
I'm getting
that.
There's
a reach.
Some people think
they were thinking that over in the
Some people think it's really for
what
5.
What should we call
S stands
this?
For Steve. Some people think it stands for Steve. Yeah, it's probably a better
one. What
better
does the C stand for, do you know?
Yeah, cheap.
It's probably
really. You hit it right on the head. Cheap.
No, it says for China because that's where it's made.
Is that what the deal is?
That's where it's made. They're all made in China.
Yeah, they are.
So finally, China got their own name.
Wait for the Pakistani version.
That's right.
5P.
So the thing is, the 5C has a bigger battery. So you got a 10-hour battery life, which is what I want, because you know battery life is kind of an issue.
It is a big issue.
Then it's also got a 64-bit processor. So it's extremely high-speed processor.
Nice.
So it's got all kinds of special features built into the camera. Like what it does, if you put it on a multi-shot mode, you know sometimes you move your camera a little bit?
Sure.
It will take three or four pictures and pick the best one and just save it.
Wow.
And
that's
then what
cool.
it does, and then suppose that, so the picture where you moved it the least, but suppose in one of the pictures, that the one you saved, the person was moving their head, so their face is a little bit out of focus because they moved it. If their face is in focus in one of the other four, it will paste it in.
Hey, take that, Annie Leibovitz.
And it will automatically...
Who needs an SLR?
So it will automatically do this stuff. It also, have you ever noticed when you take a picture, sometimes it's like a bright background and you have trouble getting this, getting the full dynamic range?
Right.
Now it actually will adjust and do processing to give you... to spread the dynamic range of your pictures.
Look at his face. It's like a 12-year-old at Christmas.
And they do all that because of the 64-bit processor.
Very nicely done.
And then finally what it has, it's got a thumbprint. So
what's the thumbprint all about?
You just put your finger on the thing and it will unlock it.
Can't we download that to put on our old phone?
No, because there's no thumbprint detector.
Oh.
There's no sensor.
Oh,
there are issues with.
So if somebody steals your phone, it's worthless.
It's worthless
because your
to
thumb
them.
Doesn't match unless they cut your thumb off and put it in a Ziploc
that
bag.
That doesn't work.
Good thinking, David.
Actually,
way to give people ideas.
Actually, it turned out that That Apple
a lot
did
of
it.
Spy books.
No, no. If,
give me your phone and your thumb.
Here's the deal. If somebody cuts off your thumb, yeah. it doesn't work. They actually can detect that.
They can detect a dead thumb?
Get out of here.
Come on.
Get out of here. That was actually one of the
Why?
Things.
You're kidding me.
That was actually one of the things.
You rejected. You got a decomposed thumb.
Consult the mafia
thumb.
When they built this
wow,
phone?
Wow, man. That's
but here tough. Is... Here is the problem.
Here we go.
So room temperature.
Here's the problem. Here is the problem. I was going to cover this a little bit later in the show. There's a new item called sleep hacking. See, so now.
Here we go.
So okay. Here's the deal. So now you've got your phone all locked up.
Yeah, right.
Maybe you don't want your significant other to know all the stuff mm-hmm. on your phone. Yeah. And while you're asleep, you're... significant other can put your thumb on your thumb drive on your thumb and open up your phone.
This shows trust.
So this is a new term called sleep hacking.
I hope Mrs. Bobbitt's not listening.
This is a sleep hack.
So, thumb, David. Thumb.
So now,
I'm sorry.
Or else you're at a fraternity party and you pass wow. out. So your buddies, take your phone and they
send a text off your phone.
And they make post to your Facebook account. So
wow.
So it can't detect whether you're unconscious or sleeping. It can only detect if you're not alive.
If you don't have thumbs, could you use your big toe?
Wow.
You could use anything.
You see how highbrow?
Oh, here we go.
You see how highbrow this show has gotten?
And we have gone right into the gutter.
Whatever you save,
you're kidding me.
No, it doesn't have to be a finger. It's just that fingers have the most features.
It has to be the same.
It has to be the same
appendage.
Item. Whatever you do.
Oh boy.
The look on David Byrne's face.
No, I'm not going there.
I'm not going there either.
No, we're not going there. Jim, are we going there?
So the thing is, it's however you set it up when you initially save it.
Whatever appendage you use, that's what you're going to have to
use. That's right.
So now, remember your appendage.
So now this is the new word, sleep hacking. Sleep hacking. I was going to cover that later in the show. But it just seemed to fit in. So this is...
That's crazy.
If somebody took my hand while I was sleeping and put it on an iPhone, I think it might wake me up.
I bet it wouldn't.
I don't think so?
Hey, remember the old, were you in the service? We used to take guys' hands, put it in a bucket of water, and they'd, kind of like, over themselves.
Yeah.
I think this sleep hacking could be a good topic for the bird minute that you have occasionally.
Yeah, the bird minute.
Wow. Sleep
Let's
hacking.
Have a bird moment.
Sleep hacking.
Sleep hacking. You need to come upstairs. I need to talk to you.
Yeah, okay.
Sleep hacking.
Yeah.
That's good. We'll stay away
We've
from the appendage
something.
Thing.
We're going to stay away from that entirely.
The 5C with its porcelain veneer is basically the same guts as the 5, right?
It's the China version. 5C.
Well, it doesn't have the fast processor. It doesn't have the 64-bit processor.
No. That's why you can get
so
it for
what,
30
what
bucks.
It is, so
it's
they,
not 30 bucks. It's still $500, isn't it?
Yeah, it's $100 cheaper. That's right. It. It's 20% cheaper.
Can I just change the whole gears? Because I have to leave, but I have to ask you this question as a normal person who listens to Tech Talk.
Okay. Uh-huh.
What the heck is it with Google Glasses? What is that?
That's insane.
What is this?
I don't know.
What is Google Glasses? Now, Doc, can you explain that without having a whole college dissertation? Why do I care?
Here's the thing with Google Glass. I think there would be other implementations that work better. No, it is having contextual information at the moment. So you could be walking down the street, and it
with
has
your Google Glasses on.
It has face recognition, and it whispers whispers in your ear. This is David Byrne approaching. And then you could speak to it. You say, I want to go someplace, and it will give you turn by turn directions. It's got that
fighter pilot display on the cockpit on his canopy. It's
it does.
On your glasses.
Who needs that?
It
what
does.
Is that all about?
And you
I don't
can and you can talk to it. I think wearable computers ultimately. Are going to be integrated into our lives.
I'm sure.
But I think the Google Glass is a little quirky. You're shaking your head and all that quirky stuff. I don't think that's the right interface.
And you really can't see through people's clothes, that kind of
thing? No, you can't.
David has no use for it.
Excuse me. I'm just asking the questions that normal people would ask, even though it sounds totally ridiculous.
Okay.
Even though I don't care.
He winks.
He winks.
And so they, and so what? So they're talking about having a little lapel pin.
Oh.
Which would be like a camera,
right.
And you could talk to it, so you wouldn't even notice it, and you'll get contextual information as you're walking around just through okay. your...
We got enough
actually
people.
Wearable computers. I think we're just we're going to get used to it.
I think they're here.
They're coming. And we already look at this. We already use Google. You know, you need information. You're always looking stuff up. So eventually, you won't even carry a cell phone around. The wearable device. See, the Google Glass is a cell phone.
Right.
So there is no cell phone. So what's going to happen, instead of carrying your cell phone around, you're going to wear your cell phone, and that's going to have an internet connection, and you'll always have the information you need at the moment.
GPS, internet, everything. So
at the moment.
The Google people will know everything about your entire life.
That is another problem.
Oh,
people,
another show.
You can track. They have everything on
wow.
you.
Jim's looking at the clock. We okay, man? Are we okay with the clock?
We've got some things to do.
And in fact, I'm gonna feature next week on
string
the show.
String theories next, Eddie.
You can.
Yeah, right. Uh-oh, I think I need to leave.
Yeah,
now.
You better. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about wormholes.
I'm leaving now.
We're not going to talk about wormholes.
No, when you say you go to the wormholes, it's time to
We've
leave.
We've talked appendages and thumbs.
I'm going to cover software that you can get for free, and you can hook your phone into your computer, and it will read all the data right out of an iPhone, including all the stuff that you think you've erased.
Ooh. Okay. Well, that's a good.
So I'm gonna cover that. I'm gonna cover that next week. You know, it's sort of an extension of the sleep hacking.
I love that.
So you'll need to come back, David.
Do I have exit music or just intro?
No, just intro music.
Okay. Well, I'll just say
we kind of leave it open ended.
Bye bye.
Bye bye, David. Bye-bye. Nice seeing you. We're gonna now go to line number 4, Charlie. This is Sally. Sally, sorry for the wait. Good morning and welcome to Tech Talk. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Very good. Doc, ask the question, please.
Okay, earlier in the show we talked about Mark Russell Benioff. What was his first computer that he used in high school?
TRS-80.
That is correct! You're going to win 2 tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room. Just stay on the line and talk to our chief researcher. What is his official title?
He is the adjunct professor for prize distribution.
Oh yes, Andrew. That's right. It's very that's another form of supply chain management.
Exactly, Sally. You seem to be a new caller. Have you been listening to us for long?
Yes, every Saturday.
Very good. We appreciate that. Hang on the line. We will have Andrew Wright with you. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and we will have more of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. An executive chef at a trendy restaurant, a hotel general manager at a prestigious resort. These are the high-profile positions in the culinary arts and hospitality management industry. Get working towards your bachelor's or master's degree at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus. In fact, many of today's Stratford culinary arts and hospitality grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And there was an article this week that came out about an atomic bomb mishap that almost occurred over North Carolina in 1961.
This is stunning.
This is actually pretty scary. A secret document, which was published in declassified form for the first time, reveals that the U.S. Air Force came dramatically close to detonating an atomic bomb over North Carolina that would have been 260 times more powerful than the device that devastated Hiroshima.
Wow.
The document obtained by investigative journalist Eric Schlosser under the Freedom of Information Act gives the first conclusive evidence that the U.S. was narrowly spared this disaster when two Mark 39 hydrogen bombs were accidentally dropped over Goldsboro, North Carolina, on 23 January 1961.
I'm looking this up on Google Maps.
The bombs fell to Earth after a B-52 bomber broke up in midair, and one of the devices behaved properly as a nuclear weapon was designed to behave in warfare. Its parachute opens, its trigger mechanisms engaged, and only one low-voltage switch prevented the explosion. Each bomb carries a payload of 4 megatons. That's equivalent to 4 million tons of TNT. Had the device detonated, lethal fallout would have deposited over Washington, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and as far north as New York City. In the newly published document, a senior engineer at Sandia National Labs responsible for the safety of nuclear weapons concluded that one simple dynamo technology, low-voltage switch, stood between the United States and the catastrophe. Writing 8 years after the accident, Parker Jones found the bomb that had dropped over North Carolina just 3 days after John Kennedy made his inaugural address as president were inadequate in their safety controls.
Jeez.
And that the final switch that prevented the disaster could easily have been shorted by an electrical jolt leading to a nuclear burst. The accident happened when the B-52 bomber got into trouble having embarked from Seymour Johnson Air Force Base in Goldsboro after a routine flight along the East Coast. It went into a tailspin. The hydrogen bombs it was carrying became separated. One fell in Faro, North Carolina. Its parachute draped in a bunch of trees. The other plummeted into a medical off Big Daddy Road. Jones found that the four safety mechanisms of the Faro bomb designed to prevent unintended detonation, three had failed to operate properly. When the bomb hit the ground, a firing signal was sent to the nuclear core of the device, and it was only that final highly vulnerable switch that averted the calamity. So there were four switches that had to be triggered in order for it to be, allowed to detonate. This mm-hmm. is part of the safety thing, and three of the four failed. So that's, I don't know how much that is with Tech Talk, but that was staggering when I read that just came out this last
week.
Wow,
that's amazing. Goldsboro, by the way, is a couple of hours southeast of Raleigh. Faro is just northeast of that. So Literally, a half a mile off of I-95.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That is 1961. Well, a KVM device was used to steal money from London banks. KVMs, that stands for keyboard, video, mouse. You know, if you've got a device and you've got one keyboard, one mouse, and one computer display, and you want to hook it to multiple computers, you use a KVM device to switch the monitor, the keyboard, and the mouse to different computers. And so what happened was three guys went into a bank and they installed KVM devices so that they could remotely access different computers in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
So how they did this thing at both banks, the staff allowed a man who posed as an IT engineer, because IT engineers, they look very official.
Of course.
He came in to act, because he came in to work on the network, probably just routine maintenance, and they gave him access to the computers. Well, instead of working on the machines, he allegedly connected the KVM devices to the computers. He put it in the network, and he configured it so it could access all these computers, mm-hmm. and then he left. And then they remotely connected to the KVM device in the network, and they were able to switch around and go to the different computers, and they just started transferring money out to their different accounts. They'd created bogus accounts. They transferred money. Now, the trouble is, of course, you create an account, you got to pick up the money, so there was a trail, and ultimately, eight men were arrested for their connection with the Barclays heist, and they're still in custody of London police. But this is a It's just a little case. You just can't trust your IT guy.
No, especially
too
if he's
much.
Just wearing a Geek Squad uniform, that might be a...
I know. So, well, this week, of course, we talked a little bit with David. They've had huge lines on these iPhone stores. I mean, people have just been waiting in line. I just really quite amazing. I'd never think I'd wait that long. Well, the 5C, the plastic version, the cheap version, comes in five colors. So it might appeal to like the teenagers.
Sure.
They could get yellow, orange. You got all these different colors, but it was really meant to be a fork in the basic iPhone category. So they could end up having a cheaper category. So it's expected that the 5C is going to get cheaper and cheaper as they try to compete with Samsung in the developing markets, because Samsung is just eating their lunch outside of the U.S. Yeah, because Samsung is underpricing the iPhone by about a factor of two in the developing countries.
Do you think, keeping that in mind, do you think Steve Jobs would have gone for this then? Or would he have come up with some other...
He never wanted the discount. I don't know that he would have done this.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like Steve... This is not what Steve Jobs would have done, I don't think. Because he always wanted to go high-end and then innovate. So he would have... His focus would have been to make... to get new features that were so compelling that they could sell at the high price.
Sure.
So what's happening, the rate of innovation on the iPhone is slowing down, and so now they're having to compete on price, and that is the opposite of the way Steve Jobs would approach it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing they did on the 5S, which is sort of the standard sort of mid-release model whenever they, between the 5 and the 6, they came out with an extra color for that. Now, that's a metal case, the same metal case, but now they have gold.
Yeah.
Because you can get white, black, and gold, because gold is apparently a very popular color in China.
Ah.
And so they think the gold case is going to help them penetrate the Chinese market, even at the high price. Now, the nice thing with the S version is that they had some upgrade in technology. First of all, there's a 64-bit processor that's really fast. And so it's now, the iPhone 5S is now significantly faster than the Samsung because of that 64-bit processor. It's a screaming phone. It just really goes fast. They've got an improved camera, as I was talking to David about earlier. Because of all this high-speed signal processing, they can do all kinds of fancy stuff with it.
Mm-hmm.
They've got fingerprint detection for unlocking the cell phone. Now... There were lines in New York, in San Francisco, and one other place. Where were they selling? New York, San Francisco, and probably California that were as big as last year. So Piper's Munster is one of the first to sort of give an estimate. They're estimating that Apple's on track to surpass last year's sales of 5 million units the opening weekend. So they're projecting that Apple will sell 6 million units this weekend.
Wow.
I'm thinking, I would never wait in line for an iPhone.
No.
I just wouldn't.
Well,
I wouldn't go for it.
And especially, I mean, I guess it's a little different because we both have them right now. But still, I'd rather just...
That's right.
They'll be out there.
So now they're looking. Now the gold phone sold out almost immediately,
mm-hmm.
and now they're talking about the delays in getting phones are being pushed out to October, because there's such a huge demand. The thing that I would probably like, because I'll probably get the iPhone 5S, is that it's the battery life. It's got a bigger battery. It's a 10-hour battery life. And I'm just tired of having to go through the day. I can't make it through the day without charging the phone. And so that is a problem.
Yeah, it is a problem. I'm lucky that I'm in a spot where I can just leave it plugged in, and it's enough to get me through. So
yeah, and then so, if I go to work and I don't have a charger around, well, I'll tell you what really eats the battery is if you take a picture.
Yeah.
The camera just eats up battery power. The other thing that eats it up is that when I ran the GPS system, I was out in San Jose using Google Maps, the whole phone would get hot.
Yeah.
And so that was just really, it just eats up a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
So I really need better power. I can't believe the show is over
fast.
Well, listen, we love all your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. Also, Stratford's got a lot of great programs there in technology, software engineering. We got students from 27 countries going to Stratford. We place them in great jobs in technology. So you go to stratford.edu, the website, And when you, if you ever give Stratford a call and want to go in there and check out their programs, make certain that you tell them that you heard about it on Tech Talk Radio.
And, of course, if you missed any of the show or like to hear it again, we will replay Tech Talk at 6 o'clock tomorrow. See you next week.
Not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com, the only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
The Washington Nationals hoping to get that last wild card spot, battle the basement-dwelling Miami Marlins here on Federal News Radio beginning at 6:30 today, so catch that later on today. The weather forecast, showers and thunderstorms, highs near 80 right now outside our studios in Northwest. It is 70 degrees. It is 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as